This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you from Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus in British Columbia.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassin. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, we'll drop by Ontario, where the Russell Township foregoes a by-election by simply appointing its new mayor.
Appointment probably would not have been the way I would have voted, but I understand that we are in a democracy, and if council decides that Councillor Taranowski is the best person for this job, then I will accept that as part of the process.
The Eaton Centre will be home to the fourth Indigenous Fashion Arts Festival this May. Owen Thompson met up with the founder of the streetwear brand, Inane Retail.
My business goes like a lot deeper than just selling t-shirts.
The Wellington's Space Beans compete in the National Computer Science Challenge.
The nature of this competition is that you have to really think well on the fly, so your preparation might not even matter. And that's what I think these guys are really strong at, is that on-the-fly thinking.
A Liverpool, Nova Scotia artist rediscovers her creative spark and exhibits her work at a new show called From Chaos to Calm. And a North Hadley restaurant in Quebec is now one of four in the whole country to get a 5-diamond rating.
Oh, well, our entire family and team at Manoir Harvey are thrilled to have attained the 5-diamond designation for our gastronomic restaurant, Le Hatley. And 5 diamonds is pretty much the highest distinction that any restaurant can achieve.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listened on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome. Thanks for keeping us company. So what do you do when your mayor resigns midterm and want to avoid the disruption of a by-election? Well, the municipal council of the Prescott-Russell Township had to face that decision and came up with an idea. They appointed their new mayor. The township located just east of Ottawa will have a new mayor on May 27th. Councillor Mark Taranowski will be assuming the role. Councillors Mark Lalonde, Lisa Deakin, and Mark Taranowski himself gave speeches at a May 6th council meeting, saying they believed it would be the right choice because they did not want to lose the momentum of projects that haven't started. Acting Mayor Jamie Lauren said he would have voted against that decision, but the majority of the four-person council visibly did not share his opinion. Candace Vetter in Ontario has that story for us.
At the Russell Township Council meeting held April 29th, three councillors read prepared statements saying they would appoint Councillor Mike Taranowski as mayor until the next election, which is 2.5 years away. Councillors Lisa Deakin, Mark Lalonde, and Mike Taranowski all had prepared speeches. The question period on the meeting of the day segment of the council meeting took place before the appointment was announced, so the 40-plus members of the public were not given the opportunity to speak or ask questions about the appointment. No rationale was given for why appointment instead of by-election was preferred, other than general statements saying council did not want to lose momentum on the projects they had started.
I came to the realization that the momentum that we have here and the work that's been done here is really where we're going, and we want to keep that momentum going.
Councillor Lalonde spoke first.
And I had the privilege of actually speaking to people. Similar comments were offered on the issue of councillors having been elected democratically by residents in the first place, making them well suited to consider an appointment of a willing councillor candidate. And in particular, commitment to public service, commitment to community wealth development. So this is what led me to make the decision to propose the motion that I am tonight.
Councillor Lalonde was followed by Councillor Lisa Deakin.
Our community, from what I've heard and what I feel, expects a new mayor that comes with a proven record, an attitude of service to our community. And if I can go another step with that, to me that means it's not always the loudest person in the room, it's the one who's always willing to listen. This person has a commitment to putting the hours that our residents deserve here in our township, at the counties, and when representing us. Above all, we expect and we need a mayor who will champion the path that this table established in 2022. And it was a path that was developed with the voices of our community. I want to be clear that Councillor Taranowski and I have not always agreed. And that's the point. Working here, navigating and stewarding this path for our community requires of us debate and disagreement. And the more, the better, in my opinion. If we hadn't done that work at the beginning of this term, charted that path, like if this was all willy-nilly up here, we're just coming up with ideas, I would be one of the strongest advocates for a by-election. But that's not the case. And Councillor Tarnowski, like every member of this table, has committed to this work.
Then Councillor Tarnowski spoke.
I, like both of you, also had discussions with residents. And much like your conclusions, I came to the realization that the momentum that we have here and the work that's been done here is really where we're going, and we want to keep that momentum going. Our council received a strong mandate from the residents who voted. Every one of us at this table was elected with more than 50% of the votes cast by the electorate. By proceeding with this internal appointment, we can uphold the trust and avoid the disruptions of a by-election. As such, I would request Councillor Laurent to continue his role as acting mayor until our May 27th.
It finished with a statement from Councillor Laurent, who is the acting mayor.
Obviously, I hear how council seems to be going. I do want to make one comment that I also have spoken to many residents in the community, as I've mentioned to each and every one of you as well. And appointment probably would not have been the way I would have voted at this point. Not to say that Councillor Tarnowski will not do a good job, but I think from a representative of the public that would have been where I would have led to, which would have been a by-election. But I understand that we are in a democracy, and if council decides that Councillor Tarnowski is the best person for this job, then I will accept that as part of the process.
After the meeting, CJRO spoke to Acting Mayor Laurent.
Council was duly elected, and they made the decision at the table. I stated my opinion on it. A council chose as a majority to elect as stated in Municipal Act. That is an option that they are absolutely able to do. Therefore, yes, I do believe that democracy was upheld today.
Just to recap, you had said during the meeting that you would have chosen the other way if it was up to you.
Correct. As many people that have come to me and expressed concern to me and their opinions, and I'm a representative of the people, more people said to me that they wished a by-election, therefore that's the way I would have voted. However, as you know, sitting as the chair, I don't get to vote on that unless it's a tie vote or if it's a registered vote, and none of those came tonight. So council chose as a majority to appoint Councillor Tarnowski. Therefore, I will accept council's decision on that, and we move forward with Councillor Tarnowski as of May 27th.
Okay, great. Thanks, Councillor.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
To the east coast of the country and stop in Nova Scotia to meet up with Liverpool artist Velta McManus. Mrs. McManus moved to Liverpool in 2021 after spending 16 years in Toronto. Moving to Nova Scotia allowed her to rediscover her passion for art. And as many people did during the pandemic, Velta McManus and her husband, Peter, were looking to move from the crush of the city to the calm of the country. McManus's newest art exhibit, From Chaos to Calm, is now shown at the Astor Theatre in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, for the month of May. And journalist Rick Conrad had a chat with her.
I called the show Chaos to Calm, obvious to me, I guess, anyway, coming from Ontario, from a large metropolitan city of 4.2 million people and constant traffic and, you know, people on top of each other, to this kind of slower, calmer pace.
McManus and her husband Peter moved to Liverpool in November 2021, part of the influx of people who moved to Queens County in the midst and the aftermath of the pandemic. Before that, they lived in Toronto for 16 years, where McManus worked full-time. She pursued her Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in Sculpture and Installation at OCAD University as a part-time student.
The show is really kind of a reflection of things that I did in the past, things that I did in school, and an opportunity for me to get back into kind of a daily practice and reflection of my art. I've never been what I would consider an artist who makes work for a living. I've always done it for myself, and if it happens to inspire or spark joy in someone else and they appreciate it and want to purchase it, great. I mean, that just buys me more art supplies.
While Liverpool has served as a respite from the bustle of a bigger city, it also allowed her to rediscover her passion for art. Vic Manis says she was burnt out after years of what she calls forced creativity.
It was signing up to do this show that actually forced me to kind of do an assessment, an inventory, catalog, and actually create new works.
Vic Manis's show features an eclectic mix of styles, media, and topics, from photography in the Azores or in the beaches of Queens County, to painting, to sculpture. She says it represents 20 years of work. The centerpiece of the show is Vestige Echo, her thesis project at OCAD. It is a paper-based sculpture that consists of literal pieces and mementos of Vic Manis's life, quilted together and hung in the window. A metronome ticks on the windowsill behind it. Her parents had been packing up her childhood home in Minneapolis. They started to send her boxes of her old report cards, photos, letters, and other keepsakes they had collected over the years. At the beginning of the pandemic, her father died, and that spurred Vic Manis to go through all of the memorabilia her parents had sent her.
So it was this whole very strange experience of having to mourn and grieve from afar, not being able to be with my mom or with my sister. So then that's when I started gathering and like looking through all of the things I had collected.
She tore everything into smaller pieces, ordered them into boxes by the weight of the paper, and stitched them together according to how she picked them up out of each box. It took her 24 weeks to complete the original 8x10-foot installation piece. What's on exhibit at the Astor is a much smaller but no less compelling version.
It was liberating, right? Like, I mean, certain things, I think you put them away and you don't really ever pull them back out, do you? But they're things that I hadn't looked at. So the fact that I was deliberate in looking at every single item, reminiscing about it, but the fact that I could have that moment and that time either with that person, with that event, with that lived experience, but then pass it along. And I do kind of see this as passing it along, because it's for the Vestige Echo, it's like people have to come and they look at it, but hopefully they find something within it that triggers something within them.
Vic Manis says she loves finding beauty in the mundane.
At the end of the day, I'm still drawn to the ordinary, but I'm not somebody who's very gifted in realism. I can't paint in a realistic manner. I've never been interested in doing that.
Vic Manis jokes that since she moved to Liverpool, she's worked almost everywhere. She now works at Main & Mersey on Main Street, and she volunteers with QCCR on its board of directors. She's also the host of two shows on the station. She says she's looking forward to the opening reception on Friday, to hearing what people think of her work, and to meeting other artists from Queens County.
This is my last stop. I mean, I'm not going anywhere. Liverpool is my home now. It's a great opportunity to meet people and engage with the artist community and to meet folks that I haven't come across yet. And again, for me, it was that, okay, I've transitioned, I've moved, I'm settled in, I'm truly calm now. So now I need to kind of get back into that practice. And this was that kickstart to get back into that practice of thinking about, okay, what am I going to create next?
I'm Rick Conrad.
And back to Ontario now, where a team of computer science students from the Wellington District High School are competing in the Cyber Titan 7 Challenge. The event is hosted by the University of Waterloo in partnership with the Information and Communications Technology Council. During the challenge, teams from across the country work to fend off a cyber attack. They have to analyze their vulnerabilities in their operating system, find out how the attack happened, and fix it. The goal of the Cyber Titan competition is to get more young people interested in cybersecurity as a career. Cyber Titan 7 was held on Wednesday, May 8th and Thursday, May 9th at the University of Waterloo campus. Kate Stockman in Fergus, Ontario, met up with the young competitors.
Centre Wellington District High School is back in the Cyber Titan National Finals. The Space Beans will be representing the school at this week's competition at the University of Waterloo. The last time CWDHS was at Cyber Titan was a couple of years ago with the team Morpheus. Member Oliver Farrow shares the story behind the team's quirky name.
I joined Cyber Titan 2 years ago in grade 10. And when I did that, we were asked on the fly, what should our team name be? And I didn't know what to say, so I said Blue Beans. Out of panic. And when we did that, we also combined with a former team known as Space Marines. So once we merged, we became the Space Beans.
The challenge will see the Space Beans fend off hackers who are trying to infiltrate their operating system in real time. They will have to find the system's vulnerabilities, analyze how the cyber attack happened, and fix it. Teacher and the team's coach, Eric Gregg, says he thinks they're going to do really well.
Not to get too technical, but the nature of this competition is that you have to really think well on the fly. So your preparation might not even matter. So, and that's what I think these guys are really strong at is that on the fly thinking.
There are some nerves among the team, but Farrow thinks they can make the podium.
Definitely nervous, kind of just because of the situation. It's, you know, University of Waterloo, big tech place. So you're not sure who exactly you're going to meet. And it's all across Canada, right? So there's a lot of people there. But definitely nervous just because of the challenge we're facing, not necessarily the difficulty of it.
Farrow describes the team's strategy.
It's definitely a lot of communication and writing down what you're doing, right? You want to be organized. They try to put things in there for you to not notice or to get in your way. That can be super simple, but if you don't have a keen eye, you definitely aren't going to recognize the problem.
Alex Shepard agrees with his teammate that organization is going to be key.
I did Cisco, which is like completely separated with everyone else's, and now we're all together doing the same thing, so I'll be on like the less trained end, but as long as we like write down everything that we're doing and how we're all working together, we should be able to do pretty well.
Ultimately, the goal of Cyber Titan is to get more young people interested in cybersecurity as a career. Timothy King, Cyber Education Coordinator with the Information and Communications Technology Council, a partner of the competition, says there are thousands of cybersecurity jobs going unfilled across the country. He says focusing on the younger generation is proving successful.
A lot of people are focusing on adult retraining, so you try and get somebody who took biology or something to come across to cyber, and that might fill in a few gaps, but the gaps are so big, the potholes are so big in the road, that it's not going to work. What we need is a strategic solution, and we need a homegrown solution. So if we can get students interested in cybersecurity when they're in high school, it gets them on the right track, and we've seen this happen. We have all sorts of CW grads all over the world now, literally all over the world. We have people in Europe, Asia, working in cybersecurity, and it all started because of this.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
From Fergus, Ontario to Toronto, as we turn to the 4th Indigenous Fashion Arts Festival, which begins at the end of May. The IFA Festival supports Indigenous-made fashion and companies with panel discussions, workshops, and a runway. Running from May 30th to June 2nd at the Toronto Eaton Centre, the IFA Festival exists to support Indigenous-made fashion. With over 70 Indigenous vendors that operate in the fashion industry, the festival gives vendors a chance to expand their market, some of them attending for the first time. Such is the case with Chelsea Petit, an Anishinaabe businesswoman and founder of the streetwear brand Anin Retail. Petit is now getting ready to showcase her clothes at the IFA. Owen Thompson spoke with her about what this festival means for the Indigenous fashion industry.
So 3 years ago, I was actually just walking the street in downtown Toronto, and I thought I saw someone wearing Indigenous syllabics on their shirt. And in that moment, I felt this sense of inclusion living in the city that I'd never felt before. And I wanted to run up and ask this person, what did it say? What language was it in? And of course, where could I get one? But as I approached this person, I realized it was actually just a triangle. So I immediately started the business from that moment of inspiration and started a dropshipping website 3 days later with 5 designs, and we actually sold $3,000 in our first week with basically no marketing, just me telling my triangle story, and we got some sales.
I guess what goes into creating authentic Indigenous designs?
I don't know if like our designs are Indigenous. Like, we basically focus on the language. So we take very straightforward streetwear designs, and basically because we're an Indigenous-owned company, that's what makes our business Indigenous. But we did have one of our main collections, our Gawin Gayabi collection, which actually translates to no more in Ojibwe.
Since your start till now, what's been the biggest change in terms of the growth of your business?
I don't know if there's been change. I mean, we've had like a lot of evolutions, but that just comes with like any business and growing pains and things like that. But I would say we kind of just feel like we're still at that same spot that we are 3 years ago. We've just made a lot of sales, but we still don't have the resources and the capital that we need to actually grow a business, unfortunately.
You said this is going to be your first IFA?
Yeah. So it's our first IFA. I'm so excited to see the other artists on the runway, and hopefully we can get on there in the future years to come. I feel like it's probably the most established Indigenous fashion festival in Canada, especially. So I think it has like a lot of name recognition. And when I had my store, I had tons and tons of people from the IFA event that were just popping in before they were heading over. So I definitely had some crazy FOMO that was happening, but I definitely saw how many people were truly interested in this event.
So knowing that you're going to be with over like 70 other vendors who are also all Indigenous, how does that make you feel?
I mean, I see it every day at my store. So we carry dozens of other Indigenous brands, and we've had upwards of over 40 Indigenous businesses inside of my old store downtown Toronto. So basically, it's nice to kind of come back to that because I actually had to close my stores due to the rent costs in downtown Toronto. So it's just really nice to kind of be back around everybody. I feel most comfortable when we have other vendors participating with us. So I'm excited to participate with the other vendors.
I guess, why is it important to have an event like the IFA that highlights Indigenous involvement within the fashion industry?
I think it just is a time for a lot of people who aren't in the Indigenous community to come in and finally check it out. I liked having our storefront because we got to kind of bring that to basically like average Torontonians year round. Like, I've seen firsthand how receptive non-Indigenous people are to Indigenous businesses, just putting ourselves out there and wanting to support in any way that they can, specifically like in sales. So I think that it's just like a very crucial part of the Indigenous economy. When I had my store open all year round, people knew that it was reliable. But when you have such a big event like this, it really brings out the crowds. We are kind of level the playing field. It's like, I started my business and I actually wanted to get a store in downtown, even though I knew how expensive it was. I put up like a lot of personal financial risk doing that. And unfortunately, it obviously paid off in some ways, but ultimately I was unable to keep that store going at the rising costs. I only did that in downtown knowing that I was going to fail because we've been so excluded from the whole Canadian market itself. Like, when people think of Canadian-owned businesses, they think of Lululemon or Roots or all these other brands that aren't Indigenous. And people don't even really think Indigenous when they think of Canadian brands. So it's kind of things like that that I felt was very important to just push forward and just make room for myself. Because you see all around Toronto, there's like Chinatown, there's Little Italy, there's Little Portugal. There's so many little neighborhood pockets where people are celebrating their own cultures. And there's nothing for that for the Indigenous community in downtown Toronto, mostly in the GTA as well.
Would it be safe to say then that the IFA is a way for all of these Indigenous groups to kind of come together and share their culture, like, as you mentioned, as other cultural festivals?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes bigger than Toronto. I don't know if there is any Toronto designers in IFA this year. I didn't look at the list, but I think there's like a lot more. Like, I think there's people from like South America on the runway and like things like that. So it's actually like more global than just the Toronto pocket itself. My goal and my vision is so much more than the t-shirts that I am selling. It goes to like internship opportunities on my home community, basically helping people who don't want to take the traditional education route, people who maybe need a second chance when they're like in their 30s or 40s with employment. My business goes like a lot deeper than just selling t-shirts. So it's been really hard to advocate for myself and try to just constantly articulate exactly what my vision is and my goals, and to be taken seriously as a Canadian business owner. I'm very, very passionate about reclaiming the Indigenous economy through ownership.
What are you looking forward to most for with the IFA this year?
I mean, we're looking to onboard a lot of new vendors to our website, www.aanin.shop. So Anin means hello in Anishinaabe Mo'en, and our website is just anin.shop. I'm just mostly excited to network with just like indigenous businesses from all across Turtle Island and hopefully build some great relationships and get some new products onto our site. Hopefully start the conversation on many, many more positive years of indigenous reclamation to come.
Hi, I'm Ed Halverson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, and you're listening to Viewpoints.
And we close our show on a mouth-watering story as we learn that the Manoir Hove's restaurant called Le Hatelet has just received a 5-diamond CAA AAA rating. Le restaurant is located in North Hatelet on the shores of Lake Massawippie. The restaurant and its chef, Alexandre Vachon, are now amongst a highly selective group in North America. Journalist Derek Bullard spoke with Jason Stafford, the director of Manoir Hove, about the significance of this rating for this family-owned Relais Chateau established in 1979 and its restaurant, Le Hatelet.
The 5-diamond designation with CAA and AAA is very hard to attain. There's only 4 other restaurants in all of Canada that have that designation. They inspect their hotels and restaurants rigorously every year. The inspections are anonymous, or most often they're undetected when they visit. If you attain 5 diamonds, it's a reflection of the reality of the food and service that is being presented at the given restaurant or hotel. We have been very proud ambassadors for the Canadian and Quebec terroir ever since day one at our gastronomic restaurant at Manoir Hove. Seasonal, local, fresh products. We try to establish relationships with producers that are as close to our property as possible. And in any restaurant, the quality of the ingredients is what really makes the difference, along with the talent of the chef. So for us, it's just a wonderful recognition to have attained this 5-diamond status. We're also part of the Relais and Chateau family of hotels and restaurants. So we have about 600 of us all around the world. We're in 60 countries. And one of the big emphasis of Relais and Chateau is, compared to other hotel groups, is the emphasis on gastronomy and on promoting sort of terroir, local-driven cuisine. So presenting the best of what your region or your area of the world has to offer. And I think that's something that we've consistently been doing since 1979 when my father first acquired Manoir Hove, and it's remained in the family since. So we're truly honored to have achieved this highest level distinction that is attainable with the 5-diamond designation for our Le Hatelet restaurant.
And that's it for us. Thanks to Candice Vetter, Derek Bullard, Owen Thompson, Rick Conrad, and Kate Stockman. Thanks to both our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by Fund of Canada with the help of your local radio station. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Thanks for being with us this week, and until the next, ciao.
Nationwide.